Seattle's Morning News. This is Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. And joining us now, CBS senior business analyst Jill Schlesinger, who is figuring out a way that she can get the children she doesn't have into an elite college. This is, do you really find this surprising? I mean, we've known for years that if you can get your name on a building, you get your kid into college, right?
Yes, I mean, that is true. I think what's becoming clear is that we now have evidence that suggests that, especially for the wealthier families, that this is a really bad decision. Because what we now know is, yes, people make more money who have college degrees than don't have college degrees. That's clear. We also know that elite institutions can be the pathway to making even more money. So maybe the upper, say, 20% of all earners. But if you already start from a position of wealth and power and connections, sending your kids to these top-tier institutions, even the legal way, may not pay off because you already have the network. And so research tells us now that you rich people who keep writing checks for your kids to go to these big price tag schools, you have bragging rights at the club, and that's about it.
I mean, I've heard it said that these schools don't offer any better academic training than an also-ran school, but that it is all about the network. So really the people that we want to go to these schools are not the ones who are already connected. There should be, dare I say, affirmative action.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even say affirmative action. I mean, you definitely, there are people who are wealthy enough to pay the price tag, and they say, I don't care whether this amounts to a higher income level down the road. I want my kids to get the best possible education that I can pay for. Okay, fair enough. If you got tons of money, then fine, write the check. Because if you pay full boat for that education, you're helping subsidize someone who actually can't pay full boat. Fine with me. But I think that the problem I'm seeing is in some of these, let's call it upper middle class families who have good money and want their kids to succeed, they are taking on debt or making really poor choices for themselves or their kids to get a degree that may not in the long term pay out in the same way that you thought it would. And that's really the critical issue here. It's almost like if you can get into Yale and you're a middle class, even upper middle class, it probably will pay off. The question is, if you go a couple of tiers down into a good private school that costs a ton of money, not a great private school, are you getting your dollars worth? I think the evidence suggests no.
Let's talk about some other issues that are bubbling up to the top here. General Motors, the president's very unhappy that GM is closing some plants. And so he personally calls the head of GM and got nowhere. So what happened to this whole idea that we're going to make all our cars here instead of in other countries?
The economics of running these big companies is much different than the rhetoric that was really kind of displayed right after President Trump took office. And what you find is that if you are a CEO of a big company, you have some pretty big people to answer to. Those are your shareholders. And if you are keeping plants open when you don't need to have those plants open, those shareholders will punish you. And those are the bosses. Not, it's crazy to think that like the president is weighing in on this, especially a president who was quite fond of using the law and bankruptcy to not pay a lot of his vendors. It is quite startling to see him enter into this conversation. Now, look, GM, Ford, Chrysler, all these companies, they are operating under intense competition. They're also coming off of a few years where they had record high car sales. That is changing now, and they are reacting to the current environment, and they are shifting accordingly.
Another company having trouble, having nothing to do with the president, is, of course, Boeing. What do you think is going to happen there?
You know, whenever you have these very big companies that come under scrutiny for some sort of, you know, crazy liability, it's not just public relations. It is really about what the company does to correct this. And so, you know, everyone always goes back and cites the Johnson & Johnson Tylenol case, which probably you and I are the only ones who remember. Yeah. But that's when we had some problems with bottles of Tylenol that were manipulatable. And basically Tylenol said, we're taking every single bottle of Tylenol off the shelves until we fix the problem.
Right.
And I find that in stark contrast to the way that Boeing handled this, in that they didn't say, we are not waiting for countries to ground us. What I think they should have done was said, we are grounding every single one of these airplanes until we figure out what's going on. And that what we see is the companies that are willing to own up to the mistakes, address them, and then they can move on, those are the ones that become success stories in light of really tragic circumstances.
CBS Senior Business Analyst Jill Schlesinger. Thank you, Jill.
Take care.
Seattle Morning News. This is Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. If you swallow gum, does it stay in your stomach for 7 years? If you sit too close to the TV, will you go blind? If you cross your eyes too often, will they get stuck? Let's consult the doctor.
Paging Dr. Cohen.
Dr. Gordon Cohen, MD. These are generally referred to, or they used to be referred to, as old wives' tales. I think it'd be better to refer to them as elderly spouse quips or something, just to be a little less judgmental. But let's tackle some of these. The thing about gum, I used to hear as a kid, if you swallow gum, it doesn't go anywhere. But I'm guessing that's not true.
Almost everyone swallowed a piece of gum in their life. Very few kids ever need a doctor because of it. Your stomach, although it can't really break down a piece of gum the same way it breaks down other food, your digestive system can move it along through normal intestinal activity, and it comes out the other end, just like everything else.
All right. Well, we've handled that one. Sitting too close to the TV, making your eyes go blind. I heard that, too. Of course, back in the day, we had black and white, you know, cathode ray tubes, and we were worried about electrons hitting us or something. Does that still apply, or did it ever apply?
Contrary to the popular myth, sitting too close to the TV will not damage your eyes, but it may cause some eye strain. And children, they can focus at close distance without eye strain better than adults. So oftentimes children develop the habit of holding things really close, their reading materials or their computer screen or sitting in front of a television. But now we're all sitting in front of a computer screen really close and nobody's talking about it. So there really is no evidence that this damages the eyes in either children or adults.
And crossing your eyes and getting them stuck, this is a derivative of what my grandmother used to tell me. If you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way. I quickly found out that wasn't true. But what about the eye crossing thing?
Yeah, I think your grandmother told you that because she didn't like the face.
That's true.
And I think it's probably the same thing with this. Yeah, when you cross your eyes, you may get a few laughs, but it won't cause permanent damage to your eyes. Really, our eyes naturally come together when we look at things closely. So if you put your finger and bring it in close to your nose, your eyes will actually normally cross. And that's part of the normal way that we see things. So when you cross your eyes, you're just exaggerating what is otherwise a normal response. And so, no, your eyes will not get stuck in that position.
Okay, while we're on the eyes, when I was 42, things started getting blurry. So I went to the optometrist and he said, well, you're 42, you need reading glasses. And I said, well, you know, why don't I just, can I do exercises to keep my eyes focusing properly without having to go to reading glasses? Won't they make my eyes weak? And he sort of poo-pooed that. So is he right?
The unfortunate part of the aging process is that our vision gets worse as we age. I was lucky for a long time. I actually just recently had to start using readers in order to read. And I was thinking, gosh, am I making my eyesight worse by using these things? But it's not true. Using the correct pair of glasses does not make your vision worse, and you really don't grow dependent on them. The thing is, you kind of do become dependent intellectually because you get used to seeing things with more clarity, but it's not like when you wear them, it's making your eyes worse. This particular myth is based on the misperception that if you were to wear glasses or contact lenses, that somehow they would change the physiology of your eye, and that just doesn't happen.
But they don't.
Really, it's just natural aging and its effects on the eyes that have played a role in spreading this myth.
Now, here is one that I think people still believe. Sugar causes hyperactivity in kids. It doesn't?
You know, I heard that forever, and I could have sworn when my kids were growing up that it was causing hyperactivity. The science doesn't actually support this. There really are few other claims about behavior that really more firmly ingrained in our culture, and that's the problem. You know, you always hear these stories about parents fearing that birthday cake or Halloween candy caused their kids to become hyper. But if we look at it scientifically, there's no evidence whatsoever that sugar does, in fact, cause hyperactivity in kids.
Okay, and finally, how about this one? We only use 10% of our brain. I've heard that forever.
I actually have heard it forever, but the 10% of the brain myth is really an urban legend that most or all humans only use 10% of their brains, misattributed to many people, including like Albert Einstein is one that we often hear that he used more than 10% of his brain, and that's why he was so smart. The truth of the matter is it's not true. We actually really use all of our brain. We use all of our brain, and the brain has many, many different functions. Some of it is for thinking, conscious thinking, and some of it is for memory, and some of it is for running the physiology of our body. The notion that we're using only 10% of our brain is false. There is just a specific portion of our brain that contributes to the thinking process. The brain uses a tremendous amount of energy, and it uses a tremendous amount of oxygen. So imagine the inefficiency in our body if our brain was taking up all this oxygen and energy and whatnot to only use 10% of it. I mean, it kind of would create some sort of a survival disadvantage for us. The truth is our brains are actually highly efficient organs. We use all of them. We just use some of it for our conscious behavior.
All right. Well, it's good to know all those things and how many of them are not true. Next time we'll tackle chicken soup, okay?
Okay.
All right. Dr. Gordon Cohen, MD. Thank you, Dr. Cohen.
Thanks, Dave.
This is Yale's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. We've seen students go on strike, young students, claiming that since they're going to bear the consequences of global warming, they've got to find some way to pressure the adults in their lives to do something concrete. Meanwhile, the adults are still trying to decide whether this stuff is even real or not. And now we bring into the mix some new research indicating that we may have failed to account for one very important factor, and that is the effect of global warming on the cloud layer, which, if it were to disappear, would cause even more rapid and catastrophic warming than we're already seeing predicted. Chris Bretherton is an atmospheric scientist at the University of Washington, also knows a lot about math, and is familiar with these computer models, which have, for the first time, tried to figure out what the impact of clouds are. So tell me about this report, which has stirred up so much debate, Chris.
Well, my colleague Tapio Schneider from Caltech recently published a study in Science Journal that aimed to look at what would happen to clouds when we raise carbon dioxide levels, when we raise greenhouse gases in the atmosphere a lot beyond where we hopefully will raise them in the next 50 years, but still to the point which they could get. Mm-hmm. So what his study did was it coupled a very detailed computer model of how clouds form off the coast of California, where he lives, to a very simple model of how the climate might respond to that. And what he found, to his alarm, was that as carbon dioxide levels were raised, the clouds start to go away and then suddenly disappear. That will tend to amplify the amount of warming that we get.
Well, and when you say amplify, what I'm reading here is that it would be catastrophic. I mean, crocodiles swimming in the Arctic, I mean, that was one of the images that was raised in the study.
Yeah, it could be catastrophic. And in fact, we did at one point, 50 million years ago, have crocodiles swimming in the Arctic and redwood trees growing in the Arctic. And what caused that? Well, we think that it was carbon dioxide, in that case, naturally produced by very large volcanic eruptions. But we can look to ancient climates and actually see this kind of stuff happening.
So do you think, now we're talking, as you just said, about levels of carbon dioxide vastly larger than we even have now. So what is the likelihood of that happening?
Well, right now, we could, if we took all the fossil fuels that we knew about and burned them, get carbon dioxide up to the level where all of this would happen.
Right, but now, nobody is setting out to do that.
No one is setting out to do that, but the question is, are we setting out not to do that? And I think the issue is that people have to take a very deliberate decision to move away from fossil fuels, or else we could actually end up in a situation like this in about a century.
There has been a debate about this latest research into clouds from some people who say that, well, the research was conducted on cloud formations in California, which are unique to that area. Does that have any substance to it, that criticism?
Yeah, well, I was among the people criticizing the details of this research. Mm-hmm. But while details of the study are controversial, I would say the general picture is quite consistent with what we know about the science already. I think it says that what we do over the next 50 years about greenhouse gases is going to make a very big difference to not only our kids, but their kids and grandkids. And I think it's very easy to underestimate what happens if you try and wake a dinosaur like the climate, and then it comes back and tries to terrorize you.
Well, yeah. I'm curious, have you ever spoken about this with an out-and-out climate skeptic, you know, the kind of person who believes it is a hoax?
Yeah, I've spoken with climate skeptics, mostly individuals, and in some cases, actually scientists in my own field who mm-hmm. have their doubts about some of the evidence. The basic science of greenhouse warming is very, very simple, and no one debates it. Everything is in the details, and clouds are one of those important details. And those skeptics will argue, well, how do we know that clouds aren't going to massively increase in a warmer climate? We're not observing the future. And it's very hard to observe clouds right now. And, you know, they're right. It is hard to observe clouds right now. I can't say that they're for sure wrong. What I would say to skeptics is, how can you be so sure that you're right that you would want to stake your lives on it, given that 99% of scientists think you're not? In this case, the worst case is really something worth thinking about.
Have you ever changed anybody's mind?
I don't know. I've sat on an airplane next to people. That's a good time to have a conversation sometimes, and you don't get to choose who you sit on the plane next to. And I believe I've probably changed minds in that case.
Let me ask you this. Could we find ways of... Well, I mean, we're a resilient species, right? Originally, we began in Africa. We figured out ways to live in the Arctic. We figured out ways to live in the tropics. Could we figure this out, too, by advances in, I don't know, air conditioning or carbon capture or something?
Yeah, I'm very optimistic about the human species, too, and I actually believe that we will figure this out. That doesn't mean there won't be pain along the way. We definitely tend to respond to crises.
Right.
What's great about this problem is we have all the tools at our disposal to address it already.
We do.
Already have solar and wind power.
Is that enough, though? I mean,
yes, actually, we could, if we deployed wind power across this country, for instance, as an example of something that's actually relatively cheap to do, there is enough wind power resource in this country to more than generate enough electricity for the entire country.
Really?
Yes, right now.
So you've mentioned cost. You are a mathematician. What is the cheapest way out? Is it cheaper to be proactive and adopt these technologies before we absolutely need to, or is it cheaper to wait until the crisis comes and then to cope?
Of course, this is something that economists, including economists at the University of Washington, have looked at a lot, and partly it depends on how much you value your descendants. If you discount your descendants by 7% per year, then it's always more appropriate to wait till the future. If, as I think most people do, they value their descendants as much as they value themselves, it's much more cost effective to attack the problem now.
Maybe we need to sit our kids down for a heart-to-heart talk.
Exactly. Our kids can tell us what to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Well, that's how you started things out, and that's maybe the appropriate way to think about this.
Chris Bretherton is an atmospheric scientist at the University of Washington. And Professor, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's time for your daily dose of kindness. If you're finding yourself not shocked at the news of another mass shooting, numb to the body count, unsurprised by the shooter's motivations, apathetic over the gun control debate, let me offer you a break from the awful headlines. Let's look at what humanity is really about.
I think the more that we do, the more that we show that we care, the more that they feel part of the community, because they are part of the community.
In the wake of the New Zealand mosque shootings, these individuals didn't lock themselves inside. they opened their arms to the local Muslim community.
I wanted to show my support to the community. You know, I mean, I believe in equal rights for everyone, and it's just terrible what happened.
It's just two of many people who showed up Saturday along with Cairo 7 TV to an event called Cup of Tea, Get to Know Your Muslim Neighbor. It's something the Northgate Area Mosque has been doing since 1995. But this one was different. They usually make room for about 100 people. But hundreds came to this cup of tea. And police came, too, to offer protection.
We believe that ignorance always breeds fear. And the only way to counter fear is by education. So by reaching out to the community, thousands of people visited the mosque.
And that is the headline, at least for this moment of kindness.
Amen. Sports Insider brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. And here he is, mad as ever, Danny O'Neill. And the Huskies made it to March Madness.
Heck yeah, they did. Number 9 seed.
Jeez.
What were they last year?
Did they not make it? They were unseeded.
Okay.
Didn't they lose their last Pac-12 game, though?
Yeah. They made it in. At-large berth. I told you about the at-large berth. Turns out the Pac-12 got three teams in.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And Gonzaga number one again.
They are. I'm going to actually see the Zags. I'm going to be in Salt Lake City on Thursday and Friday.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah, I'm going to be attending those games. The University of Washington, this is their first time in the dance. We call it the Big Dance, Dave.
Yeah, I know.
They're in the Big Dance since 2011.
Oh, since 2011.
I was looking at sportsline.com, you know, just to get a little leg
I'm
up on.
I'm worried about what you choose as your
on
as
brackets,
your,
and you have to pay for this stuff.
Well, that's not a problem. You have to pay for good information. Would you trust food that was just free?
What's the good information, though? I mean, everybody's guessing, right? Isn't everybody guessing?
Some people guess
better
than others.
$24.99 to get a bracket somebody else filled out and then, you know, somehow put money
on that.
Well,
what's the fun in that?
Why do you have me on every morning if everyone's just guessing?
Well, you guess better than anybody else.
See?
At least you guess more entertainingly than anybody else.
There you go. Well, that's the reason that you pick and pay for certain different things.
I see.
Have you filled out your bracket?
I have not yet.
Okay. When do we have to have them filled out?
You have to have them filled out really by tomorrow, because that's when the playing games start.
Have to have
a lot of pressure.
Yes. Deadline now?
Yeah. Have you thought about the rationale you're going to use? Are you going to use based on academic ranking? Are you going to use ferocity of mascots, always a popular one?
I don't think I've seen a college game straight through since my daughter was at Gonzaga.
Doesn't mean you can't fill out a bracket.
Yeah,
well, I know it does. There's no prohibition against it, but it would carry no weight. It would have no authority.
That's
it wouldn't
the
mean
whole
anything.
Point is that you fill out a bracket, and then you can show all the know-it-sums that they're know-it-nones, and you can act like a know-it-all.
Mm-hmm. Who do you have winning the whole enchilada?
Well, I haven't filled out my bracket yet. I can guarantee it's not going to be Gonzaga.
It's not going to be Gonzaga?
No! God, no. Washington's good enough now that I can start hating Gonzaga again, and it's a beautiful thing.
So you
I hope
think
they lose to Fairleigh Dickinson.
So you think the laws of physics won't be violated by a Husky win, huh?
No. God, no. Okay. I think we're ready. So we're set up. We've got all our clunkers out of the way. Washington's got a great defense that can cause some problems. They just have an offense that can be awful sometimes. And I feel like we've gotten the bad ones out. It's kind of like an engine where you run some bad gas through. Do you ever have a friend that had that theory? Like, we just had some bad gas. No, it's a bad car, dude. It's not that you had to run through some gas. It's that your car stinks. But I feel I'm gone back to believing that they just ran through some bad gas. They had an awful game against Chris Sullivan's University of Oregon on Saturday night.
Oh, that's right. I forgot
it was
to
hideous.
Mention who they lost to.
Oh, it was hideous. They scored like 12 points the entire game.
Yeah, it was
it's disgusting.
Twice in a week, Oregon beat them down.
Do you care about Ducks basketball, too, or just Ducks football?
Well, you know, it's where everybody in my family but me went to school, you know, so I grew up there. I know I don't really follow college basketball much anymore.
Let me answer this. The Ducks aren't as good in basketball as they are in football, so he's much more interested in football than he is in basketball.
Well, and I also played a lot more football than I ever did basketball, so I'm just kind of, I don't know, they went to the Final Four, 2 years ago in basketball?
If you're a true fan, do you get to pick and choose
what
you root
eight.
For?
No, they went to the Final Four.
The Oregon Ducks?
Yeah.
No, they didn't.
They certainly
that,
did.
That did not
two
happen.
Years ago, yep.
Absolutely not.
Do you get to pick and choose what you root for if you're a true fan?
No. There's certain rules and violations that you have.
I'm a little skeptical on his fandom of Oregon if he isn't rooting for basketball.
No, let me tell you.
I just don't watch a lot of sports that aren't my son's.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, you're so involved in his
here's
long
the thing.
Snapping.
No one would choose to be a Duck fan. Like, you're just afflicted by that. Like, it's not a choice. It's something that's passed down. So he comes by it earnestly.
Family.
He comes by it earnestly. It's a negligible trait that's been passed down from his kin.
Why don't you stand up for Notre Dame as much as you stand up for Oregon?
Oh, because Notre Dame doesn't need it.
That's true.
They do now, but they don't need. I always felt that Notre Dame always got the, you know, my alma mater got is out there with all the national championships. Mm-hmm. What Oregon has never gotten over that hump, so I feel they need a little more help in getting some love.
The Notre Dame faithful already has an insufferable national following.
That is true.
And the fact that Sully is not out in front and part of the parade is one of the things I feel like it's just carbon offset for the previously mentioned negligible Oregon heritage.
I see. So just to be clear, brackets are now being filled out professionally by people like you two guys.
Yeah.
And you're getting and they're getting paid $24.99 to do that.
I'm not selling any brackets.
Okay.
I'm not selling. I'm going to enter a couple contests.
Are you going to enter one, Dave?
No.
You're looking at me like you want to, like you want me to egg you on to fill one out.
No.
I will sit down with you and record the bracket filling out from Dave.
Why don't you want to fill out a bracket?
Just pick him out of a hat. Just pick him out of a hat.
Well, that's entertaining too. The whole point is
that's how you should do it.
The whole point is that someone selling their bracket for $24.99 probably won't be as accurate as you, who admittedly know nothing about the field.
That's true.
I see. Well, that's discouraging.
Level
no, it's encouraging, Dave.
How is $24.99 any different than me paying somebody $24.99 to take my son's SAT test?
I was just going to bring that up.
That's not the price. We've all agreed about that.
I think it costs more than that.
I got to hear the story this weekend about how my dad got caught cheating taking the SAT test for someone. And what I came out learning was that my dad was an absolute bad businessman because he didn't get much of anything for taking that test.
Sports Insider is brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. Thank you, Danny.
You bet. Talk to you soon.